After the cut, they were similar, but the material was quite different. I compared Acock's clothes with mine, it was a difference like day and night. Looking up close, I looked as if I had walked and drenched in the rain, while Acock was wearing a suit that would allow him to go to any invitation. I was ashamed, if I had at least worn a proper suit with a tie. I had never seen anyone here with a tie, apparently, they did not wear these, which was a pity, as it adds variety to every suit. On the other hand, there were cuffs and fringes everywhere, but nothing was worn around the neck as all the jackets were colorless. Before leaving Earth, I would not have dared to even go to a cafe in this suit I wore. Here it was different, it was something new. When I thought about it, I was a little more optimistic again. We sat here for a few minutes without talking. At the moment I had nothing to ask and was lost in thought. As I was about to start a conversation, the young man reappeared and spoke a few words with Acock. Probably the son of the sun had come now. I sat cramped in my chair. Acock got up and told me to do the same. The son of the sun entered with slow, firm steps. He smiled, rubbed his hands, came up to us, put an arm around our shoulders and greeted us with a nod. I replied very embarrassed this greeting. We all sat down. The two talked for a few minutes. I assumed that he wanted to know details about me, since he often pointed to me. I have been able to guess some of what they said from their gestures. I also understood well when he told the young man to offer us something. The young man went out and came back with three glasses on a tray. First he served the son of the sun, then Acock and finally me. I hesitated to take the glass because I was afraid it might contain something very strong. Acock, however, encouraged me when he said, "Take it, it's the same as mine at home." I took the glass and took a sip. I was just wondering if someone else was in the apartment besides us. I would have been right if I had not met anyone. Now another young man came in. He greeted us and turned to the son of the Sunday. Acock then said to me, "You will now meet the son of the sun's family." "Yes," I replied stuttering. But then I said to myself, "Do not be a fool. Hopefully his children are still small, then there are already two questioners less." No sooner had I thought this than a woman with a boy and a girl entered the room. We got up and introduced ourselves. Acock introduced me to the wife, the boy and the young girl. I heard only sounds like rock and roll or something like that. Of course Acock had not translated the names into German for me, he only translated, "The biggest desire of the three is to meet a terrestrial person, before your return there." They actually seemed very curious and looked at me from head to toe, at least the two children. The woman seemed to be more in control. I had never imagined that I would see such strange beings as the children represented them. I did not feel well under her eyes. All I had seen on Acock so far was very pale, but the two before me looked like walking corpses. I would never like to meet any of them in a dream. The conversation was stimulated. I think the son of the sun told more about his family. I only said yes or no, heard nothing and stood there like an automaton. I was petrified under the eyes of the children. To my great relief, they soon left. We sat down again, the son of the sun and Acock were talking, and since I could understand nothing, I followed my thoughts and imagined the three again. The woman was a little more than medium-sized and a bit full-bodied. You could not tell if she had a slim waist as she wore a wide dress of thick cloth. The skin of her face and hands was deathly pale, white as ash. She had a big mouth with thick lips, and a fine nose medium long in her full face. The eyes were big and clear and slightly protruding, they seemed to be checking everything, but without being curious. The woman seemed to have a great self-control, she looked as if she was not afraid of anything but could not admire anything. Her hair was straw yellow, a color that prevailed on Acock. Her son was about 10 years old and looked very similar to her, he only had a shorter and rounder nose. I would have liked to have a camera on hand to photograph the daughter. She was about 16 to 17 years old and did not look much like her mother and brother. She was tall and slender, without any curves. I could see no discernible bosom. She had a nice long neck that matched her body. Her face was less beautiful, it was even scary. She had a pointed chin and a split mouth that was always half open and had long teeth. The nose was long and slender. If you had laid a ruler from your chin to your forehead, it would lie perfectly smooth. She had big, oval eyes like Cleopatra, instead of sloping to the ears, they were more in the direction of the forehead. Her long loose hair had the color of green corn after drying, so almost no color at all. They seemed completely dehydrated and lank. When I had this family in front of me with their questioning looks, I felt like someone who has to be told what he sees because he cannot understand it and can only stare. In my childhood I had always been told stories about beautiful and strong young men who did everything to win the hand of the princess. They insisted on bitter adventure and fighting. But if they had seen this young girl, they would probably have done more so as not to be forced to spend the rest of their lives at the side of this girl. I was interrupted by Acock in my train of thought. He translated for me a question of the Son of the Sunday. He had certainly noticed that I was thoughtful and now asked what I thought. "Well, I think of many things," I replied, seeking a better answer, because I could not possibly tell him what I had just thought about his daughter. "Have you finally decided to stay here until our deadline?" "Yes, I know now that they will bring me back to Earth, so it does not matter to me for 2 or 3 days. He smiled satisfied and asked, "Could you write a story telling the details of your trip here?" "Should I write a story?" I was scared because I thought he doubted my loyalty. Why did he ask me that? Did he think I was not keeping my promise or telling anything wrong about my treatment on Eckhart? He should not think that of me, because I could only tell this story to a few relatives and friends. "It's not that we do not want you to tell it, on the contrary, I ask you to write the story." I understood less and less. Lately they had asked me as little as possible about my adventure and now he asked me to write a story about it. I said, "I'm not fit for that. I'm not very educated, what should I write?" "One should ensure that this story is read as far as possible on the whole earth." At this suggestion I almost burst with laughter, but immediately recovered and replied, "Frankly, I do not understand you, sir. My earthlings would not believe a word of it." "You think so now, right now, because you cannot provide evidence, but after 20 earth years, or even earlier, it will be believed. And that is important to us. That would be nice, but it is very difficult, because I have no means." "Do not worry about that, these funds will come. If you can write history, do so, it will benefit you, us and some of your fellow human beings." "Why only some of the Earth humans?" "Well, if you stay here for another 3 days, Acock can show you and explain everything you want to see and know. As for your last question, Acock can explain this to you better than I. He knows everything as well as I do, and for him an explanation is much easier because he can talk to you directly." Acock now pointed out that we would go to another room to eat there. At first I thought this room served as a dining room, as in Acock's apartment, but for that purpose there was another room that was a little smaller but furnished in the same style. The food was ready on a square table. Before we sat down, Acock spoke to the Son of the Sun, then went to an apparatus that was like his in his apartment on the hair. He made the connection and his wife appeared on the screen. They talked happily for a few moments. He probably told her that we would not come home for dinner. The Son of the Sun now asked us to dinner. All members of the household were present. We sat down and after a short prayer the food was offered to me. I looked around to see if her curiosity had died down. Nobody paid attention to me, except for the young girl, who did not seem to be satisfied. She looked at me with contracted eyebrows. Her eyes were so intense that there were moments during the meal when I hid my face behind my napkin. I was certainly a lot more embarrassed than she was. If Acock had not reminded me, "Serve yourself," I probably would not have come to dinner under the gaze of this little monster. I took from the things that I already knew. There were different plates, almost all were similar to those I had seen on other tables. Interestingly, nobody talked during the meal. After the meal there was a sweet drink, and afterwards the wife of the son's son, who had served dinner, carried out the plates and bowls. The two young men and the boy also left, and to my great relief finally the young girl, after one last stinging glance at me. I leaned back in my chair and sighed with relief. Acock and the son of the son must have noticed this, for they interrupted their lively conversation and looked at each other thoughtfully. "Did you like it?" asked the son of the son. "Yes, thank you, sir." "Surely you are not used to our foods?" "No, but I like to eat them. By the way, I'm not very fussy with food, and I quickly get used to another diet." He dropped the subject and stood up, saying, "I would like to talk to you even longer, but as there are so many difficulties in communicating and my time is very tight, because I have one more sitting in front of me, I will leave you to Mr. Acock, who will explain everything else to you. Ask him a lot of questions, he will accompany you while you are still here." We went back to the first room and Acock and I left the apartment on the same way to the lower corridor. From there we drove with another elevator to the terrace. When we got out there, I said, "I'd like to see some more of the city." "Yes, we can do that, we have time." We walked around the whole terrace. Just a few flying machines landed, from which, I assumed, several counselors climbed to go to the elevator. The rest of the day I spent sightseeing the city, which was truly admirable. Acock showed me more buildings and explained their purpose. The sun was already quite high, they illuminated the houses and made them shine in many colored splendor. In terms of noise, this city on Akkad was very different from a big city on Earth. Although everything was moving everywhere, almost no sound was heard. There were no trams, trucks or cars, only the little sunships flew back and forth, making only a slight hum. I asked, "Are not there any vehicles on wheels?" "Yes, they do exist. But you cannot see any. I later saw them on farms. There are tunnels, or subways, for this type of transportation. You cannot see how long the roads are. Do they all serve pedestrian traffic, and why are they so narrow?" "Because we do not have much space, we have to benefit from every ray of sunshine here." "But why do you have to squeeze like that here? Why do not you stretch the city?" "I already told you that it was not only in this city, but on our whole planet very much there is not much room." "Is your planet so small?" "No, but he is overpopulated. We have about 20 billion inhabitants here on Akkad, whereas our calculations on Earth are only about 4 billion people, and the two planets are about the same size. We will now fly to my apartment. I will then show you what our people have to do to deal with this problem, except what you have already seen." We got into his flying machine and flew to his apartment, flying quite high and in one. I really admire this city with its 100 million inhabitants. Thinking that we were halfway to Acock's apartment now, when we went down and soon landed on Acock's terrace we went in. His wife came to meet us smilingly. His son sat with a book in his hand, and when he saw us, he got up quickly and hung on the arm of his father. I sat down and said, "Here I am again. I cannot explain how I felt when I entered this apartment again. It was as if I had come home." In the son's son's apartment I had had complexes, because on Earth was the person with the highest position. I had only ever talked to a prefect, and it was logical that I was scared of a king or a president of a 20 billion people, especially as I was still staring at slit A's. As Acock pulled himself along, his wife and child and myself all went inside. I sat comfortably in a chair to rethink everything I had experienced that day, and I took stock and was satisfied. Everything had gone very well. 11. Visit to the farmland. Acock came back and spoke quite loudly with his wife, but it did not sound like a fight. Finally, he turned to me, "Come along, I have a lot to do, and then we will visit a larger part of Akkad. I'll show you the true miracles that are here." He escorted me into the room, pointed to the shoes and clothes, and walked away. And when I put the clothes on, I wondered what he meant with the true miracles. Should there be anything more wonderful than what he had already seen? That was not possible. That would have to be divine things. I did not want to question this either, because they were governed directly by God here. As I put on my clothes, I realized that they were made of a different material than the earlier ones. I went out. A cook was waiting for me in the other room with wife and son. I walked with springy step in the flexible boots. "Are you ready?" A cook asked. "Yes, sir." I told my wife that we'll be back shortly before the fifth meal. He took a briefcase, put a hand on his wife's shoulder and then the boy's shoulder and said, "Let's go." Both looked at us smiling. We got into the flying machine. A cook maneuvered as before, and we flew off. When we were about 400 meters above the rooftops, we flew in a straight direction to the east, and faster than ever before. I wanted to look down at the city, but could not discern anything. So we flew for a few minutes, then Acock throttled the speed, flew a semicircle and stopped in the middle of the air. I asked in amazement, "What's going on?" "Nothing special, I just wanted to show you our agriculture. Are not we over the city anymore?" "No, we've already left that behind." "But, that's not possible." "Yes, yes," he answered. I looked down. Part of the flying machine was transparent, as I said earlier. I did not understand anything of what I saw down there. "What is that?" A cook told me, "This is our arable land. It looks like channels or huge stairs." "Yes, but these are walls that curve on the ground, are man-made." He then lowered the craft to about 40 meters above the ground and made a turn around the mountain. Now I could see in greater detail what I glimpsed before. Channels and terraces appeared. "This arable land looks so fabulous. You must have worked on it for centuries." "No, it's only been a few years since we got to this system."
"Why?"
"Well, I already told you that we are facing the problem of overpopulation. General lack of space goes hand in hand with it. Therefore, we had to abandon the growing crops in fields, because this type of cultivation did not yield enough. The terrain here is very depleted and in order to prevent this and to get bigger yields, we have resorted to this system. Look up there in the mountains. Do they not look like steps from here, like stairs?"
"Yes, they sure do. Well, everything in this area is laid out this way." I could now see it up close.
"What's being planted here?"
"Nothing at the moment. We have recently harvested here. Now the land is being prepared for the sowing of crops."
"What did you harvest here and what should be replanted?"
"It's a root vegetable, similar to the potato on Earth."
"Okay, do you know our potato?"
"We know almost everything that grows on Earth. Do you want to get out and see the fields up close?"
"Yes, very much so." He manipulated some levers and we flew straight down. The terror hit my body. I thought, "We'll hit the ground soon." But we landed very gently. He switched off the machine and we got out. The ground under my feet was springy. I was at the bottom of the fields that surrounded the mountain. We climbed up the hill for a while. From there you had a good overview and I could only say, "This is fantastic. I want to tell it as well as I can, so that the reader has some idea of it." The plantations were all nicely aligned there. Where the ground had been raised, a wall was erected, the height of which varied with the topology of the ground. So one terrace was above the next to the top of the mountain. The distance between the individual terraces was between 20 and 100 meters, sometimes more. The upper part of the first wall stood at the same height as the lower part of the next, and so it went around the whole hill. The whole resulted in a step-shaped plantation 20 to 100 meters wide. From time to time you also saw dwellings. They were pretty houses, like houses in the city. But almost all had only three walls. The fourth wall was always natural rock. I thought, "What kind of people are they? They choose the worst area to live in." However, I was taught a lesson by Acock when I asked him about this strange design. He explained to me, "Well, it used to be different. But the lack of arable land has forced us to demolish the houses in fertile terrain and move them to rocky areas." "For how many years have you been practicing this system?"
"On a certain Akashan continent, the most populated area around for about 100 Akashan years, and gradually it has been used everywhere. How are the continents divided on Eckhart? Acock smiled like a father at the question of his son, Dad, why is the cock crowing, why does not he speak? Of course, by seas. Are there any seas here? Certainly. Tomorrow you will see one. Why can't I see anyone in the fields at work out here, but we can see a great extent. As you can see, these fields are already prepared to receive the new crop. If you want to see this, we'll go further forward, there you'll see hundreds of people and machines at work. And in fact, when we flew about 20 kilometers, I saw numerous people and dozens of machines working the soil. Acock landed the flying machine near a house that had been built into the mountain. A man watched us getting out. Acock showed a paper, then they talked for a while. The man nodded his head happily. Acock had probably asked for permission to show me the facilities. Come with me, Acock said to me, and I followed him, and as he passed, the man looked at me as if he wanted to hold me back. Surely Acock had told me who I was. We climbed some curves that surrounded the village. After about 500 meters we stopped. In the first and second turn below us people were at work. When I saw the machines up close, I almost fell in amazement. The machines had an incredible similarity with the tractors on the ground, but the sound was lacking. At best, there was a slight humming sound, like an electric motor. The blades that raised the earth were not at the front, but at each side, attached to an object that looked like a propeller. The wheels seemed to be made of iron and were hooked. I would have liked to record it, but I have to admit that I do not have much talent for drawing. How are these machines set in motion and why cannot you hear a sound? You hear nothing because they are powered by solar energy, the same power we use for our spaceships. Since I want to keep my narration short, I do not want to go into the details of our conversation, nor about what I think of the application of this solar energy, if it were available on Earth. For a long time I looked at the super technology of this very intelligent people. Acock said, let's go. We still have 2,000 kilometers to cover until the next meal. I looked at him and thought, did he go crazy? 2,000 kilometers in an hour, and that in this steel ball. How do we leave here? The same way we came here. I asked a little doubtfully, how long is it, until the third meal? 1.5 tenths. 69 Earth minutes. You cannot do that. You'll see if it's possible or not. We went back to the house. The man stood still there and looked at me in surprise. Acock said goodbye, and we got in. We ascended vertically upwards and then flew forward, about in the same direction as before. After about 20 kilometers he stopped in the air again, and as there was a transparent canopy, I could see everything very well around me, and what I saw dazzled me so much that I thought my nightmare was at an end and I found myself back on Earth. He showed me a herd of animals grazing peacefully on a meadow. What kind of animals are these? Just like the cattle on Earth with only minor differences. He pulled the machine lower until it hovered about 10 meters above the ground. I thought the animals would run, but they went on peacefully. They resembled our oxen, but they had no horns. They had a very thick coat and were twice the size of the largest ox I had ever seen. After some time we flew on. What are these animals for? They serve different purposes. Their meat is excellent, and we make great use of their wool to make fabric for our clothing and also for the wall coverings of our apartments. Do the females give milk like our cows? Yes, but it cannot be used as food. Is there a large number of such animals here? Yes, but those who see you down there are full-grown animals that have been brought here after being fattened. Where are they raised? In the colder areas, where there are large grazing areas, they like to eat the grass there, and after the harvest, they are brought here and then slaughtered. We finished the conversation. Acock let a second opaque hood down over the transparent canopy, so that now we only had a view forward. I moved a little closer to see a glass square he had in front of him. It was divided into three parts. Through one section you could see what was going on behind, the other two gave the view to the right and left. I looked through it and said laughing, now I understand why there is never a collision in confined areas. Yes, here you can see in all directions. He pointed to another square, which I had not noticed before, and pressed a button. Here you can look down, if you want to land. Because of the high speed UI could not TMT make out the features on the ground. As long as we had talked, I had not noticed this speed as unpleasant, but suddenly I did not feel well. Also a draft was coming in from somewhere, which I felt on the side of the body. I breathed very fast now. Acorn looked at me and asked, "Do not you feel well?" At that moment my voice failed me, I just nodded my head. I did not need to say anything, because he could see my condition. He went down a bit at speed and asked, "You've probably never flown on Earth by plane?" Not only have I never flown, I've seen very few planes close up. I remembered my flight from Earth to Akkad, which I was told traveled at 500 kilometers per second. How could I have survived this journey? What is the maximum speed of this apparatus? It's about 10,000 kph. Why was not it so bad on my Earth to Akkad flight? The speed was much higher than the current one. Well, there is a big difference. Here we have to overcome air resistance and at the same time supply our lungs with the air we pass through. In spaceflight, this problem does not exist. First, the spaceship is much larger. Second, there is no air resistance, because the spaceship produces its own oxygen containing air in sufficient quantity for the crew. You are completely independent of the external environment. Although you do not directly feel the air resistance in here, someone who is not used to this type of flight does not feel comfortable despite the much lower speed. 12. A city in the mountains. I felt much better now. I had my breath under control again. Acorn had probably reduced the speed by half, because I could now see how the mountains approached and were left behind as they were overflown. I had not noticed mountains or valleys before. It now appeared to be a seemingly endless mountain range. I had never seen the Andes and Chile before, not even in a photograph, but that's how I imagined them. As they approached, they seemed at first to be veiled, but suddenly I noticed a beautiful city instead of the mountains. Oh, is there a city here? Of course, this is the largest industry center of Akkad. As we flew over the city, I could see that it was built entirely into the mountains. Why did you choose such an area for building a city? One of the reasons you well understand, here it is quite impossible to plant plantations, but you could build a city just fine as you can see. Yes, you are right. The second reason is that Akkad's largest sun steel mines are in this area. There was nothing more natural than to build the greatest workshops of sun ships, engines, etc. in this locality. Was this ship built here that took me from Earth to Akkad? I can't TMT say for sure, because there are several such centers on Akkad. Could I see them up close? Yes, of course, that's why we flew here. But first we will land to have a meal. Do you know this city well? I think so, he said with a smile, flying over and around the city for a lap, thinking he wanted to look for a well-known hotel. While flying over I could see the wonder of a densely populated city that could only be seen by flying over it, from afar. It escaped an ear TMS gaze as it was built entirely into the rocks, and there were mountains, like the Sugarloaf of Rio, which I had seen from afar, but this one looked more like a gigantic building that instead the whole thing nestled from the foot to the summit, thinking to myself, such a thing is only possible with a people who do not intend to wage a war that destroys half of their fellow men. There are also such people in our Earth, but they are regarded as fools, because these people are following the fifth commandment of God: there is no killing that benefits the other. God has given the creatures that he created the space and the means to live. You just have to know how. We flew a few more laps over the city. Then Acorn stopped the craft at TMS forward motion in the midair and gently lowered us down to the roof of a large building. It was on the slope of a mountain, and I saw several ships standing there. We got out, went to an elevator and went down to the ground floor. On the way, I noticed that we passed 15 floors. We got out, walked down a short, narrow corridor and entered a large hall. Probably this was the dining room of a hotel, because I saw several set tables in it. There were quite a few people there, some worked, the others sat and seemed to wait for their food. Some looked up as we came in.